This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn-Mark Rushen-Kennison and Noel Lim. And it's 7.06 in the morning, Monday the 23rd of December. And in about 15 minutes, we'll be taking a look back at some of the standout political moments we've had here in Malaysia, from by-elections to Muafakat Nasional. But before that, let's take a look at how the markets closed.
So on Friday, Asian shares closed near 18-month highs on Friday as a trade thinned just before Christmas, and investors seem content to digest the chunky gains already made so far this month. Now, Korea grew 0.35%. However, the Nikkei dropped 0.2%, so did the Hang Seng, about 0.25%, and the Shanghai was down 0.4%. However, closer to home, Singapore's STI was higher, 0.15% higher, and the KLCI jumped 0.9% high. And I think if we look on a few days basis, the KLCI is making a significant little comeback there.
Yeah, Yahoo for people who hold Malaysian stocks. Well, in the US, stocks gained after encouraging US economic data and optimism about international trade deals, you know, the trade war between US and China, that we might see some resolution at least into phase two. But, you know, certainly the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.3%. It's been doing very well. S&P 500 jumped 0.5%. The NASDAQ Composite Index expanded 4.4%. And all this despite, I think, the impeachment had obviously failed to cool stock market bulls. The market has done really well. And perhaps I think what the market is saying, that the Republicans control the Senate, which will hold a trial on the impeachment, and they're not likely to vote to remove Trump, right? So I think the trial in January, we'll see more certainty. But I think by the looks of it, the market is saying, yeah, the trial will probably not lead to any particular outcome.
Yeah, I think the outcome of the impeachment process was largely expected. But this morning, to give us a bit more insight into global markets, we have on the line with us Stephen Innes, Asia-Pacific market strategist at AxiTrader. Thanks very much for joining us, Stephen. Now, US equities have hit record highs in recent days in anticipation of the signing of the US-China Phase 1 trade deal. But you've noted that markets have yet to price in a Phase 2 deal at this stage. Are markets being perhaps overly optimistic?
Well, it's interesting because I think at the current levels, we've definitely priced in the P1 agreement or the Phase 1 agreement. It's certainly cleared up the biggest tail risk that we've had going into year end. So I think markets are reveling in the afterglow of that thought. Of course, P2, Phase 2 is going to be where the tougher negotiations are going to happen. But you know, there's a lot of positivity filling the air right now. And along with that, we're starting to see a rebound in the global growth. And that's really key. I think this is what's transcending the euphoria around Phase 1, is that the data is actually bottoming. This is bottoming a lot quicker than the market or any analysts had expected. So this is quite good. Of course, we have to keep the broader trade negotiations on our radar. But if you're like me, who's sort of, you know, looking at an unquantified model, trying to guess what President Trump is going to do, which is always a tough thing, mind you, I think he's sort of going to goose the economy and the markets again halfway through the year, maybe accommodating towards another phase two. Because remember, we're in this election year. You know, I've been playing very much the election run-up as part of my outlook for him to move into this phase one, just to boost his ratings. And I think he'll do the same as we move through next year. So there is a plus and there's a minus. Remember, it's an election year. He needs that boost.
And last week, the Bank of England maintained interest rates at 0.75%, but hinted at the possibility of rate cuts in the new year. Stephen, what do you think about this? Is this the right call on their front?
Well, you know, the economics are quite negative in the UK, and my feeling here is they just didn't want to jump the gun simply because of the overwhelming majority that the Conservative government won in the election. This sort of indicates, or it should indicate, that we're going to have a Brexit. Hopefully we'll have a harmonious divorce with the EU. The EU might be more open to negotiate, to compromising to the UK stance, given that the majority of the UK people have spoken. They don't want to have any, you know, sort of uprising throughout the UK, creating a lot of disturbance. So they might be a little bit easier here. However, the Bank of England is looking at this thought that there's like 100 billion worth of pounds sitting on the sidelines here that could come into the economy over the next year. Of course, the timing is uncertain. What I'm referring to is a capital inflow from foreign direct investment along with equity flows, which could, in theory, stimulate the economy. So they're just taking their time here. Certainly, markets are pricing in another rate cut. They just didn't want to, the Bank of England just didn't want to cut rates now. They'd rather give it a little bit of time to see how the economy is actually going to work out post the UK election.
Still on the Bank of England, Andrew Bailey has been named as the replacement. Do markets see him as the right man for the job?
Steady as you go. The market's always like that. They hate big changes, and I think the market's happy to see that. What I'm referring to is he's a Bank of England man and very much had a steady growth within the banking community in England. So that's very positive. Markets like steady. As I said, they don't like any sort of surprises, and this wasn't a surprise. So I think the markets are happy with that appointment.
Now, oil is ending the year on a high note, with markets showing some bullishness for the year ahead. What accounts for this positive sentiment going into the new year, and what are the risk factors to consider?
I think demand is up. Product demand is up in general, despite these inventory data that we've seen up and down. There was a more benevolent inventory data, the U.S. inventory data that we saw coming out of the EIA last week, which was supportive. I think there's a couple of things here. Oil markets remain supported by the fundamental backdrop. That's what I'm referring to, is the uptick in the global economic data. Looking at China's economic data is actually quite surprising in the fact that it's starting to stabilize, and this is a really good sign for the global growth, and we continue to see China adding some stimulus to the economy, not deluges of stimulus, but enough to keep the engine revving. And if we look at their actual imports, they're at record highs. And this tells me that the teapots are actually going to the teapots or the refineries I'm referring to in China are going to continue to be ramping up here, simply because the trade truce suggests to me that trade flows are going to increase again, therefore manufacturing in China will increase. And this is positive. We start seeing that happen in India, who's another big demand of oil, which is probably likely to happen as if global economies start to pick up again. I think this is very bullish for oil going forward. I think this is one of the key trades that people are starting to look at going into 2020.
Well, thank you very much for your insight, Stephen. And that was Stephen Innes, Asia-Pacific market strategist at Axie Trader, talking to us about the markets in review as we head into the end of 2019, but also talking to us about Andrew Bailey, who has just been appointed as the next governor of the Bank of England. Now, as Stephen said, you know, he is a recognised figure, so he does lend some stability to the transition, because Bailey is currently the chief executive of the Financial Conduct Authority, which is the city watchdog. He will become the 121st governor of the Bank of England, taking over from Mark Carney. So he's set to serve a full year, a full 8-year term.
The search for a new governor began in April, and Bailey, who has spent more than 30 years at the bank, was seen as a favourite for the job. However, the FCA had faced criticism in recent months over its regulatory scrutiny of the flagship fund of one of UK's best-known money managers, Neil Woodford. The fund was suspended in June and eventually closed, with investors expected to see lose large sums of money. In addition, the FCA's report into the Royal Bank of Royal Bank of Scotland's treatment of small business by its controversial restructuring division was called a whitewash, and after being recommended taking no further action against the bank, which obviously all of this kind of kicked some dust up in the air.
I think after all this whole Brexit drama this year, I think what the markets really need is stability. And so Andrew Bailey had spent some time as deputy governor of the Bank of England, I think for about 3 years. And so he's, like what you mentioned, a steady hand and a well-known one. And also with that regulatory background, I think that helps a lot. But of course, there were, you know, some talks that perhaps the bank could have been led by a female governor. Of course, you know, this female agenda will always surface once in a while. But I think for now, I think he's got his work cut out for him. He's going to be leading the BOE in terms of negotiations on Brexit. So it'd be interesting to see what's going to come up from BOE next year.
Indeed. And also this morning, we're taking a look at China. They are taking a major step to open up their sectors, ranging from oil and gas to telecommunications and railways. So they've been easing market regulations and lowering financing costs for private companies. Now, according to a government statement, the Chinese government will also offer more tax breaks and broaden incentives to more firms. Now, this is particularly important considering that the Chinese economy is growing at the slowest pace in 3 decades. And they've also had some warning signs flashing through their financial markets.
Yeah, President Xi, who's negotiating an agreement amid the trade war with the US, is seeking to increase China's political clout and revive ancient trading routes under his One Belt, One Road initiative. I think some of us have heard about that. Spending heavily on infrastructure projects, the move is touted to help the government tap a market where it has 27 million private companies employing more than 340 million people and accounting for 60% of the economy. Now, to help companies raise funds, it will also back the bond issuances of these companies and lower the threshold for new convertible bonds.
Well, I think for sure this is all part of China's reforms. You know, you need to distribute wealth and you have to ensure your SMEs that support your economy, they are growing fast as well. And not just SMEs in the big cities, but also in the second tier cities as well.
Now, speaking of China, recently we cannot speak about China without also touching on the subject of Hong Kong, because there has been some news out of the protests there that are going on 6 months now. A Hong Kong police officer drew a weapon after coming under attack at a rally in Hong Kong city centre. And this clash occurred during a gathering of hundreds of people at Edinburgh Palace in support of China's Uyghur minority. So police stormed the rally after a Chinese flag was ripped off a pole near City Hall. And So the police did say in a statement when they tried to arrest someone, protesters hurled objects at them and one person even tried to snatch an officer's gun.
Hong Kong has endured more than 6 months of angry clashes between protesters and police, and we're anticipating that this will continue into 2020. The unrest ignited by a proposed extradition law to allow fugitives in Hong Kong to be sent to places including China to stand trial has killed off any economic momentum, with the city entering its first recession in a decade and the market losing a lot of the gains it had made this year.
And speaking of protests, India has also been seeing protests as the government is now looking to defend its new citizenship law. More than 20 people have died in India in 10 days of clashes sparked by the bill, which critics see as anti-Muslim. And this is no doubt something that we will continue to be watching as it develops. But up next, we're going to be taking a look at the Malaysian political scene throughout 2019. So be sure to stay tuned for that conversation after this, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.